That's right. Let's eat to the beat here on Heritage Radio Network. It's great to be back in the studio, and we're back big tonight. First, I'd like to just make mention of our sponsors, Hearst Ranch. Such an amazing family-run company. They do amazing things on the west coast of the U.S., but more specifically, I want to say that Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. That's important. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable, native grasslands of the central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. And of course, for more information, go to www.hearstranch.com. So thank you, Hearst, for all of your support and your continued support. I believe they pledged to keep us on the air for many, many more years. So tonight on Eat to the Beat, my guest is Baron Ambrosia, creator and star of Bronx Flavor, the monthly half-hour program on the public access station BronxNet. The series title Bronx Flavor is a little tame, considering the high-energy plots, the playful, daring characters, and their, dare I say, costumes. Perhaps costumes, maybe not. Maybe their real-life garb. All wrapped up in episodes, which, like I said, Baron stars in. He sits and savors local spectacular cuisines and always gets the women in the end, so I've noticed. So, Baron, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot for having me. It's great to be here.
It probably takes you a full month to write, to prepare, to organize, research, design, edit, produce, et cetera, all these shows. So you began last year, and you've become hugely successful. So tell me how the show developed and what it's been like these last few months.
The show started off, funny enough, as a podcast called Underbelly. You know, I had always, you know, worn kind of fun suits and, you know, had always been, you know, styling to my own beat, I guess you'd say. And I was also, you know, I was always going out and exploring different eateries. And a friend of mine approached me, says, you know, you should really do a little show. And I said, well, you know, I like to be, you know, I'm a filmmaker. I like to be behind the camera. I like to edit and I like to create and I like to write. I said, I don't really want to be in front of the camera being myself. You know, I don't want to kind of, because it's not a character. It's just some, you know, it's just my own life. And another friend called the next day, totally from the other side of the world. And he's like, yeah, I think you should do a food show, you know, as yourself. And so I said, well, why don't we'll make things a little wilder, a little crazier. And we start off the podcast called Underbelly, which after 8 episodes, you know, I did with my own money, became the number one food podcast on iTunes. And that was really thrilling. I'm like, well, I can't really afford to do this much longer, you know, because, you know, it was a very kind of ambitious plot lines and a lot of action, you know, a lot of involvement. And so I started shopping around in BronxNet. Television in the Bronx, of course, has 4 channels, 3 which are, you know, considered public community access, and they have one more channel, which is Channel 67, which is all media professionals creating original content.
This and 67 is on our Cablevision, local Cablevision.
And 33 on Verizon Fios.
What about Time Warner?
Time Warner, I'm not sure. I think it's also 67. I'd like to say that.
Well, since this is an international, internet-based radio show, and we're listened to from folks around the world, you can, y'all can see these episodes, which have were spawned by Underbelly, Baron's podcast, on BronxFlavor.com, and you've just posted your new quote-unquote season, huh?
You've got we've got the two Endgame Part 1 and 2, the big season finales, which have underwater battle scenes, erotic dance numbers in the South Bronx scrapyards with lots of fire. It's I think you'll really dig it.
Baron likes to get in trouble. he likes to include, like I said, women, gangs. Certainly the restaurateurs and the cooks and the sort of sort of leaders of local color that create the serious side of the show, which is to bring forth the history, the excitements, and really just the reality of what's going on in the Bronx.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so UN Bronx Net, which is your, which is the cable station, the public access station, are like a match made in heaven.
Yeah, Michael Maxinabi, who's the executive director, is just a samurai warrior. He's just, like I said, he's the head of the whole station, but he's out with us, you know, in the doing these shoots in the middle of the night, in the middle of blizzards, torrential downpour. He's out there running and gunning with the crew, and he's the guy who said, "Look, man, let's make this show happen." I said, "Well, you know, I need to get a budget." And he goes, "Well, I'll see what we can do." And it's been a match made in heaven. And really, it's been great for the Bronx, which is near and dear to both of us, that we've been able to showcase this borough that really doesn't get a lot of positive attention, especially when it comes to food. We have, I think, the least amount, maybe aside from Staten Island, of the five boroughs entries in like the Zagat. And to me, I'm like, well,
who cares?
Who gives a shit? You know, it's like this is about real food. These are about the restaurants that people in these neighborhoods eat at. These are not places for tourists. You know, these are places where you're going to get the genuine, authentic food at a reasonable price, because it's not serving an outside demand. It's serving an inside demand. That block, you know, if that's a Trini spot on that block, Trini people go there because the food there is better than their grandmother can make. And that's making quite a statement.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know? And just to back up your statement that it's win-win, and you know, you and the network are, you know, two peas in a pod, so to speak. Someone wrote that something like 20% of the people interviewed in the borough either watch your show regularly or have seen it. I mean, that's outrageous. So of course your executive director is like, I mean, and he should be pumped at and quite supportive of your, however guerrilla your projects are, but you are have dutifully and deservedly won a lot of attention.
Well, thank you. One thing I've said from the beginning is the Bronx is not an easy audience to please. They're a very honest audience. But once you get the respect, it's a very loyal audience. And, you know, it's not like, you know, we just show up, we drive in from wherever and film there. It's like we live there, and every day you'll see me in the street. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, there's Baron Ambrosian. I come over, I'm going to talk with you. And if I got time, I'll sit down and have a cup of coffee with you. You know, and just walk. We're always in the street. We're always passing out flyers in the street. And that's, you get that love because you're bringing it to the community, you know. And whenever we can be part of things happening in different neighborhoods, we do, because it's just nice to be there, you know.
And it's like the United Nations up there. So you may be generalizing about how difficult it is to break in or to, you know, soften your neighbors up and that sort of thing, especially with a camera and with even your natural attire, which are sort of like, you know, sort of zoot suity, certainly colorful, always a tie, definitely ponytail, sort of a friendly but sort of a wild presence in person for all you listeners. But my point is that you cover a wide range of eateries, cultural festivals, music, holidays, like, say, let's just give some examples. St. Patrick's Day fares pretty prominently in one of your episodes. City Island does. A salsa soul singer from way back in the day, which we'll get to specifically, fares prominently. And I guess I'd like you to sort of describe how, just before the show, you re-explain how this is sort of in and of itself a work of art, because of its like multifaceted layers, and the plots thicken, and all the different characters that you bring in, both from the historical serious side to the absurd sort of fake gangs. Some of the gang members actually might have been in the real deal, but anyway, you know, what it takes to bring a show together.
I mean, the general idea, you know, in the creation of the show was to have something that was combined culinary journalism with sketch comedy and a narrative thread. And I had gotten the idea because, you know, a lot of shows I would watch, food shows for research, were strictly from the journalistic point of view with a little, you know, little banter in there just to kind of keep your attention. But once you watch it once, it was kind of like, oh, I've gained the information I want from this. And I said, well, if you have something that's informative and it's talking about the food in these neighborhoods, but also has a narrative thread that you have emotional interest in, you know, you want to see what happens, as well as some kind of wacky, shticky, kind of really fun little tales involved, there's a reason to rewatch it. There's mm-hmm. a reason to show somebody. There's a reason to be like, you know, I got to see that one part again and again and again. And at the same time, every time you're seeing that, you're also being like, mm-hmm. I'm getting a little more hungry too. Mm-hmm. I think I got to get up to the Bronx. I got to hop on the 5 train. I got to go check out that spot he's talking about. You know, so it's like it comes back to the community, but the formula is something that we, you know, I started from the beginning. I think it really, it makes it fun, you know, and it makes
it's
you...
It's pure entertainment, and no one really cares if you get the girl. It's just absolute, it's such a pleasure to sit through and sort of swim through your mind, because you are the writer of a lot of this material. So we're going to take a really short break, in fact, a minute and a half break, because that is how long the introduction to Bronx Flavor with Baron Ambrosia on BronxNet.com, public access station. That's how long it is. And you can get all of these episodes in their entirety on BronxFlavor.com and hear all about, this empire of entertainment. So here we go. Here's the beginning of...
Menos hablar, más probar. Baron Ambrosia,
Baron Ambrosia,
Bronx Flavor.
We're back on Eat to the Beat, and that was the introduction to Bronx Flavor with Baron Ambrosia, and you're singing in that.
Well, that's actually, that is a really good friend of mine, a platinum recording artist, Opera Steve, who has sang on with Fat Joe and Big Pun, and he's a hip-hop opera singer who's really a Bronx hero, and he really laid it down on that one.
I urge everyone to go to the site BronxFlavor.com, because at the end of each episode, and really just on the homepage of the site, there is so much information about what's covered in each episode, even the absurdities of it all. You know, this manhole is, you know, over, you know, here. You know, there's a map, basically, on where Baron is actually filming every one of these episodes, and all of these professionals who sing or who cook, etc., are given real good props on the website. So obviously, you're a resident of the Bronx.
Yes, I've lived there for, you know, over 10 years now,
and you're married to a native.
I am. She lured me in with her sensuous charms, and her passionate Bronxian ways.
Sans jealousy, correct? Well, actually, does she appear in any of?
She's in. You'll see her dancing with me in the intro.
Oh, that is her.
In a bunch of episodes. She's a fantastic dancer and has tons of her own flavor.
Obviously. So, what does a native from the Bronx think of I wouldn't say that you're a newbie by any means, but you've come into the neighborhood with a brand new perspective, but you've also brought an entire entourage, and you've brought your cameraman, and you're asking a lot of questions, and you're figuring out who your next characters are going to be. You must
sure.
be all over the borough, and yeah. she is certainly supportive, but how sensitive do some of these issues and this gallivanting, how sensitive does it get at times?
Well, I mean, she's a ride or die woman. I mean, she's a hardcore chick, and she's with her man, just like I'm with my woman on whatever we do, you know. So she's a soldier next to me. She came with me to Yemen, and, you know, she's holding the Kalashnikov. So whatever I do, you know, it doesn't matter. We do it together, and we, you know, we rock hard. But just in regards to, you know, first coming to the neighborhood and filming, you know, with people in the neighborhood is kind of funny. The first season, you know, you're met with great suspicion. You're going to these restaurants, and like you say, I'm usually dressed up, and people are just kind of like, they wanted nothing to do with me filming in their restaurants. And, you know, people might be illegal. People might have some stuff going on in there they don't want you to see. And but now that we're on the third season and the show's gotten a lot of acclaim, as soon as you walk in, people are like, oh, Baron, you're going to film here? And it's, you know, people are sending emails about come film my restaurant. So it's just so funny. At the beginning, this was a new thing, and you couldn't, and people out there, when you watch a show, it'll all make sense. But like we said, it's a combination of culinary journalism, sketch comedy, you know, wackiness. And you can't explain that to someone who barely speaks English. And you can't be like, look, I've got a camera and I'm going to do a great show and it's going to be great for your restaurant until the... You have a few DVDs that you can kind of throw at people and be like, check this out. It's really kind of, people meet you with great suspicion. Yeah, exactly. So now, but now it's great because we've gotten, you know, people are really excited.
So there was no, you didn't visit the restaurant. Well, certainly you would visit your locations to eat and to sort of put their food through your filter, but you wouldn't necessarily get all of the... every one of the owners and the staff, et cetera, involved right away.
No,
you would just show up like out of the blue.
Well, it's got to be like said. No. We'd always be a little bit of a romance. You know, first we'd go in and I'd come back. Is this a place that has something unique to this neighborhood? Is this where everyone, you know, this is the authentic taste and it's accountable in these people? These owners are interested in people actually coming to their business. You know, they're not completely closed-minded. And then, you know, next I'd kind of come in and kind of slowly ease in, and because like I said, you know, I've got these kind of elaborate stories and you want them to be in on the humor of it. You want them to get the tongue-in-cheek element of it so that they can kind of better be themselves on camera. If they're suspicious of what it is, then it's, they're going to be suspicious on camera, which sometimes is great, but in other times it's, you know, you want them to be loose and you want them to be comfortable, and you and it's so funny, you meet people and you're like, this is such a character, just be yourself on camera, and then all of a sudden the camera turns on and they clam up, you know. So
it's fascinating to see the progression of your shows, because you are so focused and you know your script, so to speak, just naturally or inside and out, whatever you have to do to make that happen, who knows? But and then come along your characters. And usually the people who are like the gang, you know, gangrene, they're called in the St. Paddy's Day episode on corned beef, which ran a couple of weeks ago. Corned Beef Confidential, to be exact. These dudes are awesome. They're loving it. They get into it and you have no problems with the flow. And then you go to the City Island episode and you go and meet up with someone who... and you have to get through hell to find them and get the secret password and get to some sort of, like, I would say an ice cream shop or something very, you know, very, very, but with great allure and great history and legacy. And we're all at the edge of our seat. And the dude does his job well, but you know he feels on camera. You know, he can sense
Yeah. And some people are just incredible naturals. That's what's so funny. All of a sudden, some... In our Burek episode, Burek Mania, the guy in the Burek shop was just like phenomenal. And like I said, every story that we have is kind of based off of some reality that I experienced while going there. If you watch Burek Mania, it's kind of a battle between these two Burek shops. And I went in and I said, excuse me. I said, I'd love to do a thing on your restaurant. And he's like, oh, no problem. I said, well, I'm also doing Dukagini down the street. He's like, I'm not doing it. I said, why not? Because we were the first ones in the Bronx to have Burek. And I said, well, that's a great story, but guess what? Nobody's going to hear it because you don't want to be on my show. And he's like, oh, well, maybe I'll be on it then. And so if you watch it, that actual character he's playing is completely, that's him. Kind of this, you know, very kind of tough and very protective of his Burek.
Listeners, go to the sidebar on the right-hand side of bronxflavor.com. You'll get all the episodes. I want to come back to a point you just brought up, Baron, about... cultural riffs in the Bronx, but we'll take your cue and play another semi-reality segment of a an episode called Joe Batan Stole My Girlfriend. Now, this bastard, but man, what a lover. I mean, Joe Batan was an old Latin soul singer from back in the 40s and 40s, right? 40.
No, he's like early 60s.
Early 60s
is when he started. And if you don't know who Joe Batan is, you know, go to Amazon.com or, you know, somewhere where you can kind of just check out a few, just hear some of his tracks. And there's some of his older stuff is some of the smoothest stuff you'll ever hear in life.
Well, Baron does a phenomenal job of bringing back the Joe Batan, his flavor, his interviews of shopkeepers that have his all of Joe's music, etc. But he also found Joe to star in this episode about stealing his girlfriend. So here's a clip.
Baron, I have me another man.
What?
I'm sorry. It's just gonna happen.
This can't be happening.
Oh, here he is. I guess this is goodbye.
Wait. Take the penil, leave the champagne.
My name is Baron Ambrosia, coiffer of culinary consciousness. Care to join me for a quick game of Bloody Knuckles?
The name is Joe Batan. Now I have seen love won, and I have seen love lost. And if I have discovered one thing over the years, it's that a man is not measured by how well he wins at love, but by how graciously he loses.
Your attempts to use sofa mystique to remold my fiery rage into sublime empathy for the power of love, well, it worked like a charm. Teach me the way, Sensei.
Just remember, Baron, follow your heart. And let the power of the celestial soul walk with you every day.
And as I stood there pondering Mr. Batan's bold pontifications, feelings of curious admiration filled me with a sense of wonder. Oh, that Joe Batan. What a guy.
All right, you got a lot there from Bronx Flavor and the showdown between Baron Ambrosia and Joe Batan here on Eat to the Beat. And you brought Joe Batan back, who is he's Puerto Rican?
No, Joe Batan is actually African American and Filipino, but he grew up in Spanish Harlem on 116th Street in the, you know, 50s, early 60s, and everyone thought he was Latino and that he's the king of Latin soul, and he sings a lot of his songs in Spanish, and it's just amazing that, you know, he was kind of thrown into this culture and became such an important trendsetter in it, you know. So he's a very good friend, and he's got some great concerts coming up, so that's somebody also to be looking out for.
And in a way, Baron, you are creating a similar kind of legacy, because you're kind of, it seems to me, looking at just even the titles of some of your episodes I haven't seen, and the people in which you, the types of folks, their cuisines, their cultures, etc., that you cover on your shows, it's all under the sort of Bronx Flavor umbrella, and it seems like no one has ever brought the Bronx, no one's ever pulled it together in such a respectful, exciting way. And it seems like you've gotten a lot of feedback on that.
It's been really great. I mean, one thing that, you know, our borough president Ruben Diaz always says, talks about one Bronx. And one thing that my kind of mission statement from the beginning was, you know, as when I moved to the Bronx, you know, it was like 10 years ago, you know, it's one of the, Newsweek said, it's one of the most diverse counties in the U.S., but it's not segregated in a sense, but I mean, people, if you're West African, you go to the West African restaurant. Mm-hmm. If you're, you know, if you're Italian, you're in Little Italy. And if you're, you know, Albanian, you're at the Albanian spots. And if you're Jamaican, you're in the Jamaican spots. So, you know, one thing that I really set out to do and was very important to me was kind of having Bronx, you know, to demystify our neighbors and, you know, have people leave your neighborhood for a minute. Get off the corner, get off the block, get on the bus and go someplace and experience some other food, some other culture. Sit down and break bread with other people. And, you know, I've been, the thing that's given me the most pride and the most joy is some of the email responses I've gotten, you know, after people have seen this show. I've had, you know, West African people have emailed me and said, for the first time after seeing my show, The Vodka Sauce Vendetta, they took their family and they went to Arthur Avenue, which is Little Italy, for the first time because they felt after seeing my show and seeing how crazy I was acting that they could go there and have a nice dinner with their family and not be uncomfortable, you know, or not be singled out.
Meanwhile, that's Arthur Avenue's the only like four block area that a lot of people in Manhattan, Queens, and Bronx. It's the only place I visited when I was growing up in the Bronx. I could say I went to the Bronx, but really it was only Arthur Avenue or the Botanical Gardens, which is right down the street. So it's now for foodies and people who like sort of read like edible type magazines. Edible is a community of publications that Queens has now, Brooklyn has, and Manhattan has. Some of those mags have little boxes on the Bronx, and some of the people reading them will take the time to be adventurous and get way out and up into that. But you guys are. You're really speaking to, and you're most excited about and jazzed about the about your neighbors, about the people in the Bronx that don't even like go down the block themselves.
Right. To me, yeah, this is the show. Start off as a show for Bronxites about the Bronx, and that's why I said these are the most authentic spots because I'm dealing with people who live in these neighborhoods. But then when you have, you know, you have young Albanians who just came here a few years ago and they're going to a Jamaican restaurant. And they wrote to me like, I would have never thought to do that till I saw your show. And then I got a little curious. So it's you know, this at the heart of everything we do, it's fun, it's crazy, it's great. But at the heart of it is breaking down these cultural barriers in the Bronx and getting people together over food in a simple way. Meet your neighbors, you know, and stop, you know, anybody could be hard and be separate and close the doors to everyone around them and, you know, kind of build up a wall. But, you know, my job, you know, as a culinary ambassador is to break those walls down. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's at the end of the day, that's the most important part of this show. It's breaking down those cultural walls, having everybody sit down. And the easiest way to get to know each other is through food.
And really, in the end, each episode is like a museum piece. You put so much effort. It's so obvious. Heart and soul and aesthetics and just a lot of fun. I can't imagine. We're going to go over 2 minutes. I hope no one minds. I see other shows do that. but I just want to give a shout out to Public Access and tell me what it was like to... since we fancy ourselves as sort of like a do-it-yourself kind of station, and we like to tell our own story and, you know, give a platform to others to tell their stories of how they get shit done.
Yeah.
What's up with Public Access in general, and has it been underappreciated?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, the best part is that, you know, with some of station like Bronx, I can't speak for other stations, but Bronx in particular is a strong station and has amazing facilities that if you're out there to use it, it's there for you. It's there for your community. And, you know, you'll see people like, oh, you know, this is great. You know, you've got a, you know, green screen, you've got this, but if you want to make it happen, you can make it happen through BronxNet, you know, and obviously this is my full-time job. I get paid to do the show, but I use a lot of the facilities at BronxNet and they've made it happen. You know, it's a place where I can go and use the green screen, use the lights, use, you know, whatever stuff, you know, the lab mic, stuff you might not have in your kit, you know, and it's something that's greatly underappreciated in this day and age is the public access, because everyone thinks you could pick up a camera and put something on YouTube, but that's not the point. Mm-hmm. YouTube, you have to choose what you see. Right now, I'm in a million Bronx homes. We're in a million Bronx homes in their television. And like we said, the show, we make it as colorful and as poppy as possible because when people are flicking through the channels, you want them to hit that speed bump and stop. You know, and if you're online, usually that's not going to happen. You got to find something, track it down. But if you're in people's homes on their TV, you have the chance of making people stop. You have the chance of getting a new viewer every time you're on, if not many more than one new viewer.
Well, here is where the minds meet. Internet, radio and public access television. Well, here
and
the
internet has been great to our show as well. It's, you know, but just say public access is greatly, people appreciate the internet. I think a lot less people appreciate public access, community access, whatever you want to call it.
Well said, Baron Ambrosia from Bronx Flavor. Thanks so much for coming to our humble station here on Heritage Radio Network. We are honored to still have the support of Hearst Ranch. Check them out at hearstranch.com. And thanks to our listeners. And well, I'm honored that you and your stories will be forever archived on our website. Something at least that we have over TV, even though I love TV and I just got my own television for the first time in 10 years. So I am going to check out Bronx Flavor, which is on every, well, you said the channels, but the time.
Tuesdays, 9:30 p.m., Thursday, 11 p.m., Sunday, 6:30 p.m. And anybody who's online, if you're within, you know, 100 miles of the Bronx, watch the show, enjoy the show. But please, if you get a chance, come out to the Bronx. Come out. Check out one of those places. I assure you, you will have the adventure of a lifetime. Find your inner Baron and enjoy the pleasures that the Bronx has to offer.
Signing off. Good night.